The first Shear in this volume, not the first one that we started with, but the first one that appears in this volume, had discussed the issue of Bishul Akum, concerns about eating food that's cooked by a non-Jew. One of the reasons, of course, was a concern about potential actual kashrus issues. But the other major concern was related to intermarriage and the concern that if somebody's eating at the home of a non-Jew and there's this kind of camaraderie and friendship and closeness that's fostered, that could be a problem. So the coming Shear deals with a couple of other related decrees that the rabbis made regarding other items. And so if we go to page 101, we see, or at least in mine, it's 101. It's the introduction to the Pat Akum.
We're 103.
So that's when your book changes the order. Okay, so page 103. So Mishnah Avodah Zarah says that there are a few other things besides this other cooked items that are problematic. Right. So Eilud Varim Shel Goyim Asurin Ve'en Isur and Isur Hana. These things that are produced by non-Jews are forbidden, but it's not like when it comes to Basar B'Chalav, it's not like milk and meat where there's a prohibition of deriving benefit. You're just not allowed to eat them. So first is Chalav Shel Chalav Agoy, Ben Yisrael Ro'ehu. If you have a non-Jew milking a cow or getting milk, and there's no Jew that's supervising them, and their bread and their oil. So then the Mishnah says, Rabbi Ubeidino Hitur B'Shemen. But when it came to oil, so that decree was reversed, but prohibition of bread and of milk remains in place. So what's interesting here, first of all, is that milk, there's something about a Jew supervising, right? That's not the same as what we had before. So we'll have to see what the reason for that decree is. But bread, in many ways, the concern is similar to what we had with general Bishul Akum. The Rambam says in his commentary on the Mishnah in source 2, Rav Eila Dvarim Kigona Padva Shlakot V'Domehen. So bread and cooked foods, again, we're grouping these together a little bit. The reason for prohibiting them is because we don't want there to be a mingling between Jews and non-Jews. And in fact, it's appropriate to distance ourselves. So one concern is that by mixing with them, so maybe perhaps we will be led to do that which is forbidden, which can mean a lot of different things. But here he explains, but that's when the sages said that we're concerned about marriage, so that's what's applied here. So in other words, we're not supposed to eat bread and cooked food from non-Jews because there is a concern of intermarriage. Now, with that said, in source 3, so the Shach, the Sifte Cohen, Rav Shapsi HaCohen, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, explains that we're not concerned about non-kosher flavor necessarily when it comes to these items. Meaning, if somebody cooks in a pot of a non-Jew, so that itself is not, we're not concerned necessarily about the taste, although of course we try to avoid eating anything that's potentially non-kosher. So I wouldn't recommend eating from a pot where there were things cooked by a non-Jew. But I guess if somebody accidentally used a pot that was was owned by a non-Jew, so after the fact we might say that we assume that hasn't been used within 24 hours, and there might be room to be lenient in terms of the food itself. But what the Shach is demonstrating here is that, again, it's not that the food itself, when you have bread or food that's cooked by a non-Jew, it's not that the food itself has what we call a chatzah. It's not the food itself is non-kosher and and transmits things that are not kosher. But the concern is about the person who's eating that food, the gavra, the person who's eating that food, might potentially be led to other prohibitions, right? So again, we're not concerned about the food itself being not kosher, although if it's not kosher, it's not kosher. But if a non-Jew cooks a steak, and they bought a steak from Seasons and then they cooked it, so we're not concerned that the steak itself is treif, but the person who eats it is potentially creating other problems, and we're concerned about the intermarriage situation here. One thing leads to another, yeah. And I think it's important to note, and I'm going to come back to this in a little bit, but I think it is important to note that sometimes when you look at the intermarriage problem today, and you think this is like a new problem of 21st century liberal society and whatnot, these concerns have existed from the very beginning, going back to Avram finding a wife for Yitzchak, and Yitzchak and Rivka being concerned about Esav and his wives, and you have Ezra and Nehemiah that there were concerns about intermarriage and Babylonia. These concerns follow us all the way through history. So
that's a meal. What happened?
Well, that's what I'm saying. At least by the time of the Mishnah, we have these rules. Did they exist in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah? That I don't necessarily know, although it could have been that around that time, as the beginning of the rabbinic period, it could be at that time that was starting. But again, obviously, we're not talking, everybody would agree, we're not talking about biblical prohibitions here, but when the rabbis were perceiving that there was a concern, so they created these decrees. So when it comes to bread,
well, what, Rabbi? What did it have to do with a non-Jew cooking for a Jew? Has not the Jew has a household and they have a servant, someone working there, had nothing to do with any. They're all married already. Nothing with intermarriage, and
well,
there's no party going on. Is this,
I hear that. So again,
they're considering if you're eating, there's some sort of a kiddush going on where non-Jews and Jews are mingling.
It's tricky in a certain sense because, in some ways, we saw that there are certain leniencies that, in those kinds of situations that, maybe when it's clear that there's not intermarriage concern, so maybe there are some leniencies when they are absolutely unnecessary. And at the same time, we try not to make distinctions between, well, this situation won't lead to intermarriage and that situation will. We often try to avoid that, though we'll see with bread, it's a lot more nuanced than with other cooked food.
So we don't have a problem.
I could also suggest that in the time of the Gemara, technically it wasn't illegal for a man to marry two or three different women. So, even if the man was married, it's not like the concerns, or there still could have been concerns that he would leave his wife for a non-Jewish wife. I mean, there's no guarantees here.
But we're basing everything on some sort of a meal, of food. We're not saying they're going to go to a bar and have a whiskey, which is
the bar. Bars are
that's where you really that's where you really meet people nowadays.
Bars are definitely relevant. That's also in some ways a complicated topic, but that's for another year. Bars, restaurants, homes, eating and drinking are situations where people socialize. And that's where the concerns come in. So on page 105, if I'm going to get these pages right for you, page 105, source 4, so jump into the Shulchan Aruch that explains the prohibition of eating bread cooked by a non-Jew. So the sages prohibited bread of idolatrous nations, and that's an important detail to consider there. Are we just talking about idolatrous nations? We're not. But there was a concern of intermarriage, and therefore we can't eat bread that's baked by non-Jews. And the Ramah says, "Vafu b'makom deleika mishum chatnut aser." So in response to what Herb is saying, even if you can demonstrate that there's really no concern of intermarriage in a particular situation, you still may not eat the bread that's baked by a non-Jew. Okay. So then Shulchan Aruch explains that the concern of pat Yisrael or pat akum only applies to the five main grains, but a bread that's made from rice or legumes or millet is not included in that prohibition. Okay. One modification to this, I don't know if modification is a strong word, but in Piskei Tshuva, so there's a tshuva that's quoted from the Tiferes Moshe. I think this is the same tshuva that we saw in one of the previous shirim, that pat shel mumar shari, the bread of an apostate is permitted. We discussed this both in the context of a non-observing Jew, can they cook for a Jew? So we discussed that previously. But also when it comes to somebody who converted out of Judaism, so the halachic principle is alva pishachas ha-Yisrael hu, that a Jew who converts to Christianity, let's say a Jewish woman converts to Christianity, well, she's still technically a Jew. And there's a lot of other problems, and you know, if it's a man, we might not give that person aliyah. But as far as intermarriage is concerned, we're not concerned here. So somebody who converts out can make bread for a Jew. So source 6 on page 106, Rav Avaya Yosef clarifies, because the Shulchan Aruch had said that somebody of an idolatrous nation cannot bake bread for a Jew. So he clarifies. So he writes up that homemade bread of a non-Jew is prohibited for a Jew to eat. There's no distinction between a Christian who worships idols and a Muslim who does not worship idols. So one thing I have to clarify, one might have learned in school that the three monotheistic religions are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So mm-hmm. Islam, we do consider to be monotheistic. Christianity is a little bit more complicated because of the Trinity, because of believing in incarnation. So from a halakhic standpoint, most Rishonim, and to this day, the halakhic stance is that we treat Christianity like Avodah Zarah in a lot of contexts. But Rav Avadi Yosef's point here is that it doesn't matter if it's a Christian or a Muslim, but you're not allowed to intermarry, no matter if the person is an idol worshiper or not. So so the prohibition applies equally to all non-Jews. Okay. So with all of this said, yeah?
No, I'm not going into there. Churches.
Right. That's a distinction. Is that a mosque is not considered to be a place of idol worship, and a church, and for the distinction that might be made is that Tosfos suggests that maybe for Christians Christianity is not Avodah Zarah, or for non-Jews Christianity is not Avodah Zarah, but for Jews we treat it as such, and a Jew cannot go into a church. So you're correct on that.
So, well, that might be a technical reason, but if you're in Israel in the old city and you're going into a mosque versus a church, you're probably safer going into the church. But that's just a comment.
No, opposite. You're safer going to, well, oh, you're saying safer from a security standpoint?
Safety rather than
safety. Okay. Possibly. Okay. So now, I don't know why they mentioned this right away, because we haven't seen the sources yet, but what we're going to see now is sort of an interesting development in the postgame, that there's a distinction between the bread baked by a private person. So, you know, I go into somebody's home and they bake me bread. So that I'm not allowed to have. But there are potential leniencies applicable if the bread is baked by a baker who sells his bread or her bread. So the halacha there might be different. And we begin to see that in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, source 7. So there are different versions of what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi potentially allowed or considered. So earlier in the Gemara, it talks about what maybe bread that's consumed in the field would be allowed even if it's baked by a non-Jew. But here's what we have here in the Gemara that's in front of us. So you have Rabbi Yosef, or perhaps Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda, who says, Lo kachaya maisa ela amru. Pam achas halach Rabbi lemakom echad. One time, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi went to a particular place. Rab pat dachuk l'tamidim. He saw that the students didn't really have access to bread, and one of the sort of foundational principles when we're discussing these kinds of things is that bread is a staple of a person's diet. And nowadays, possible the person, first of all, you know, forget gluten-free, but you know, person wants to be low-carb or whatnot, so they can get by without bread. But in previous generations, bread was considered to be a staple. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is very concerned that the students don't have bread. I'm a rabbi. Enkan Palter. Is there no baker here? So there's a disagreement about what kind of baker he was talking about. Kisvurnham lomar palter goy. So maybe Rabbi Yehuda Nasi meant, you know what, there's not even a non-Jewish baker here who might be able to bake for them. Vehulo amar elo palter Yisrael. But in reality, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was surprised and astonished and concerned that there wasn't a Jewish baker to bake for the students. Langabar says, Amar Bichalbo, Afilu Lamanda Amar Palter Goy. Even one who says that you could, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is saying that you could eat from a Gentile baker, Amar and El Deleka Palter Yisrael. That would only be allowed if there's not a Jewish baker around. Alba Malkab de Ika Palter Yisrael, lo. But if there is a Jewish baker, then one cannot eat from a non-Jewish baker. So, you know, while the development of the story and what you learn from the story seems to be a little bit murky, we do get a principle from Rabbi Chalbo that if one is going to eat from a non-Jewish baker, that would only be acceptable if there is not a Jewish baker available. If there is a Jewish baker available, you should eat his or her bread. But if not, then maybe, and it only mentions a baker, doesn't, it's not talking about you know, any random Gentile. It would have to, if one's in a situation where they can only eat bread from a non-Jew, it would have to be from a baker. Okay, so that's what it says in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. The Rambam codifies in source 8. He codifies exactly how we learn this. Avol pisha asru pat goyim, even though the bread of non-Jews is not allowed. Yish mekomot shemekilim bedavar. There are some places that are lenient. Lochim pat hanachtum hagoy. And some people do eat the bread of a non-Jew, who's of a non-Jewish baker. But that's b'makom shein sham nachtam Yisrael. That's only in a place where there's no Jewish baker. B'sadev yimneshu shas hadachat. And maybe if you're in the field, traveling, don't have other access to food, so maybe there's a real need, and then you can eat bread baked by a non-Jew. But the bread of a homeowner, I go to somebody's home, to a private home, and they put bread in front of me. Ein sham mishamar balahakel. Nobody would allow you to be lenient. Ikar gzera mishum chatnut. The reason for this decree is because of intermarriage. So if you eat the bread of a non-Jew in their home, so then you're going to dine with them, and then you're going to mingle with them, and you become friends with them, and then maybe your son wants to marry their daughter, and you come to all sorts of problems.
Can I ask you, how do you separate kashrus from this? You first have to determine if it's kosher, and then you have to determine
It's a good question. It's a good question. So the assumption here, and they note this in the footnote here, the assumption here is that people were baking bread with flour and water. And that's bread. And so we're talking about an assumption where the ingredients of bread is kosher. What is problematic today is that there are, let's say, some non-Jewish companies that will bake bread with lard, and there's animal fat that's put on the pans or on the utensils.
Rabbi, I don't mean that. I mean giving a hechsher. OU, okay, or things like that. Those OUs and OKs doesn't mean it was baked by Jews.
Okay, fine. You're right. So, first, let me finish clarifying this one issue. So first thing, obviously, that we have to assume that the bread ingredients are kosher, which, again, once upon a time was easier to assume. Nowadays, if there's no hechsher, can't say, oh, the bread is baked by a non-Jew, but I'm allowed to eat bread that's baked by a non-Jew. So there's no hechsher. Nowadays, you still have to be concerned about non-kosher ingredients. With that said, major kosher organizations today will certify bread that is baked by non-Jewish companies or where the people are non-kosher. So I don't know. So I don't even know what different brands of bread are these days, but I eat 6 for 7. I eat 6 for 7 bread frequently. 6 for 7 is not a Jewish company, but that's according to this, that's permissible because it is. Well, actually, we haven't really said that it's permissible yet. It's potentially permissible because it's baked by a non-Jewish baker, and that's their specialty. I'm not going into the home of the 6 for 7 baker to eat their bread, but. Fine. So let's go on to the Shulchan Aruch, source 9. Yishbukomot. Some places are lenient that they eat the bread of a non-Jewish baker. The Yisrael. We assume that it's a time of need, and you don't have other options. So then you can eat bread by baked by non-Jew if there's no other Jew. And so according to this, I shouldn't just be able to pick up any loaf of bread in the store from a non-Jewish company because, we live in Queens and there are Jewish bakeries here. So I could get bread from a non-Jew. I could get bread from a Jew. I'll modify that stance in a little bit, but that's what we're seeing so far from the Rambam Shulchan Aruch.
That's an additional label.
Doesn't seem like we're concerned about somebody's not observing this regard. Again, if there's a concern that they're using larder, but otherwise, I don't. If it's literally just bread, it wouldn't be a problem.
Don't we have an
And then
additional label
Shulchan
saying
Aruch. One second.
processors?
Shulchan Aruch goes on to say that the bread of Baalei Batim, of private homeowners, so Ein Sham Mishemor Baal HaGel, just like the Rambam said, nobody is lenient. The Rambam makes an important point that the distinction between a baker and a professional baker and a homeowner is not about the actual person. It's not like a non-Jewish baker is always considered to be a baker for these purposes. Rama says that lo mikre pat bala bayit elim aso livnei veto. So somebody who is a homeowner, we're talking about in their private home when they're baking for their family. Avasa olim kor mikre palter. But let's say someone's making bread in their home, but they do sell it. Or so I can't eat that bread in their home, but I can eat, but I may eat it if they're selling it's available for public consumption. And likewise, when you have a baker, so the baker, I can go to a shop and buy the bread, but I can't go into that baker's home and eat his bread. That's an important modification from the Ramah. Okay. So what we have here is an interesting distinction that when it came to Bishul Akum, when it came to Shlakot, other cooked items, so we didn't really give these kinds of leniencies that, professional cook versus a private home, we didn't give these kinds of leniencies. So why is that? So Shach says in Source 10, V'lo damin l'shlakot, d'lo nagu ahad r'shum makov, d'al hapat yichya hadam, because people live on bread. So therefore, we're more lenient with bread, whereas other cooked foods are not considered to be staples in that same way. I guess there are other leniencies anyway. If it could be eaten raw, if it's not something that would be served at a royal banquet. So otherwise, when it comes to regular cooked food, we tell you to avoid it no matter what. When it comes to bread, there seems to be a greater need. And there's a further leniency that if you throw a small wood chip into the fire, so that counts as a Jew participating in the process. So that we actually ended up applying to Bishul Akum as well. But that really originates with bread. That when it comes to bread, we can consider something to be Pas Yisrael. We consider it to be bread of a Jew, as long as a Jew did something cooking process, even if it means just throwing a piece of wood into the fire or igniting the flame. Tosfos in Source 11 have a fascinating approach here. They say, "Midaka Amar Pat Lo Hutra Bevetin." So, there's in the Mishnah we had said that a later Beis Din came and said that you can eat oil from non-Jews, even though originally it said you can't eat oil from non-Jews. But then another Beis Din said you can eat oil from non-Jews, but that was not applied to bread. So in theory, if a Beit Din wanted to, they could have allowed us to eat the bread of non-Jews, But maybe the point is that the prohibition wasn't widespread to begin with. So no, Beit Din came and undid the prohibition of eating bread from a non-Jew because not everybody was doing it in the first place. And that's a very difficult Tosfos to believe, because maybe the reason why Beit Din didn't undo the prohibition is because they didn't want to undo the prohibition. I don't understand what's going on here. But anyway, Mikan Samchu Ata Lechol Pasha Goyim Kevan Shelo Pasha Yisuru B'chol Yisrael. Tosfos take a stand that that the prohibition of eating bread from a non-Jew was never fully accepted by the entire Jewish people, and therefore there are extra leniencies that exist with that, with, for example, other cooked items where it was fully accepted by the Jewish people. And they invoke this concept in Gozring Zer al Tzibur al Im Kein Rov HaTzibur Yecholim Lamod Bo. There is a principle that we can't make decrees that are unrealistic for the majority of the community to keep. It's a very interesting principle in its own right, but here it gets applied to bread. It was unrealistic, even if there was a decree to not eat bread made by a non-Jew. It was not accepted by everybody. It was not realistic for most people. So Tosfos are willing to be very lenient in certain respects. So
potatoes on
what?
Potatoes on Pesach.
What about potatoes on Pesach?
It was going to be prohibited because you can make bread out of potatoes. But if they did that, we'd starve to death in Europe. So they
That's
let
right.
Us,
That's right.
Right?
Right. Okay. So now we're going to see how Ashkenazim came to be fairly lenient on this. So Tosfos say that that this prohibition of eating pas akum never really applied in all locales. It was never fully accepted. So it comes to the Rama, who says in source 12 on page 109, afil b'makom shepad Yisrael matzui shari. So we said before, according to the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, who, by the way, happened to both be Sfardim, so they said you can only eat bread from a non-Jewish baker if you don't have access to bread that's cooked by a Jewish baker. Comes to Rambam and says, nope, even if you can find a Jewish baker, you're allowed to eat the bread cooked by a non-Jew. So that is a big, big heter. Now, again, that does not mean you can go into a private home and eat their bread. But as far as a bakery is concerned, you can go to a non-Jewish bakery, eat their bread as long as it's just flour and water. It doesn't matter if Queen's Pita is down the corner. Doesn't matter. You can still eat it.
What was this kosher?
Okay, so that's so if fine. That's a good question for now. So if there's no heksher on bread, and let's say it's factory produced. So again, there in theory it should be allowed, except that nowadays there's major concerns with lard, with non-kosher animal fat being used in the utensils. So what? Maybe okay. So if you can demonstrate that the bread is only flour and water, so in theory, without a heksher, it really should be fine. But so the way that we experience Pat Akum at the end of the day is that the OU and all these organizations, for the most part in the United States, will certify bread that's baked by non-Jews. So you can go into a store, you can find bread that has a heksher on it. It might not be Pat Yisrael, so somebody who wants to be a little bit stricter is going to have to be extra careful. But for the average person, if you see an OU on a piece of bread, so for Ashkenazim, we definitely don't have a problem.
Don't we assume it's not Pas Yisrael unless it has a label Pas Yisrael?
If it's a reliable heksher, I don't care, what heksher is. If it's a reliable heksher, then fine. If there's no heksher, again, I think I'd be more concerned about a factory produce something, because you don't know what's on the utensils and what's going on there. But if you go into like an actual bakery where you're able to kind of like see what's going on, and you know that everything's being done in a way that it's not going to trafe up the bread, then yeah, you technically don't need a heksher to eat bread. That's what it seems like.
maybe a little bit of expansion, but I one food I really love is Sunshine Food Coffee, and they have an OUD on them. And when I look at the ingredients, I don't see any dairy ingredients in it.
Okay, so that's from the, you know, that's from the previous kashrus unit. So that's the dairy equipment issue. Technically not dairy. Technically not dairy, probably. And you don't have to wait. You wouldn't eat it with a meat meal. It's a good question. I don't want to get caught up in it right now because we only have a few minutes, and it's taking us a little bit on a tangent here. So Beis Yosef comes and cites the Rashba, who says that even if you're going to hold, like, even if you're going to accept what Tosafot says, that that the prohibition never really reached the entire Jewish people, that's only dafka min apalter. Again, that's only if the it's a baker who's non-Jewish. Even if you have nothing else to eat, now obviously pikuach nefesh, if you really have nothing to eat and you're going to starve to death, so then you basically eat anything. But if it's a matter of just going hungry for a few hours, so you can't go into somebody's private home and eat their bread, even with the leniencies that are brought by Tosfot and the Ramah. So the Shach comes, it says in source 14, that even though the Ramah says that you don't have to eat bread that's baked by a Jew, even if it's available, so he says, Yesh li zara av kol yemosh hashana. Really, throughout the year, a person should try to eat Pas Yisrael. They should eat bread that's baked by a Jew. That is the proper thing to do. But what emerges here is that that's a little bit of a chumrah. That's a stringency. Technically, the Ramah tells us that bread baked by a non-Jewish baker is lichatchila. It's perfectly allowed. But the Shach says that ideally a person wouldn't rely on that. Now, if you go to source 15 on page 110, you get something interesting, because this has sort of become a paradigmatic chumrah, paradigmatic stringency, that plays out in the following way. Okay, so during the whole year, you know, we're going through about our lives, and we try to do the things that we can do, things that are extra chumras, maybe we're not going to expend our energy on. But let's say it's a Seretz Bei Tshuva, it's the 10 days of repentance between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So technically speaking, it's still perfectly permissible to eat bread that's baked by a non-Jew. But during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, we want to try to be even more careful about deeds, and we want to try to do things in the most lechatchila way, just because it's a time to be extra focused on these things. So Shulchan Aruch says that even somebody who doesn't eat bread, somebody who eats bread baked by non-Jews during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, one should be more careful and should not eat bread that's baked by a non-Jew. That probably doesn't apply to, like, to snacks and to it mentions the footnote here, cereals, but things that are snack and that don't have the appearance of bread, it's probably not that. But, like, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to, like, pizza and just bread in general, so it's worthwhile to try to, for that period of time, to buy a Pas Yisrael. And here in Queens, it's fairly easy to do. So it's recommendable. And Mishnah Berurah clarifies, even if it's we're not talking about a non-Jewish homeowner, we're talking about a non-Jewish baker, we should still avoid that bread during a Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Shulchan Aruch says in source 17 that if there's no bakers at all, then you can eat in the home of a private person. And Ramah says you don't have to wait for non-Jewish bread, for Jewish bread. It seems to contradict what the Beis Yosef said. But again, he says there are some people who allow it. We have to figure out to what extent it's really entirely necessary. But the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra say that this is something to only be relied on when it's really necessary. The Gemara in source 19, Shulchan Aruch in source 20, explain that in order for something to be considered baked by a Jew, it's sufficient for the Jew to participate someone in the process, as we had with Bishul Akum. So if a Jew turns on the oven and the non-Jew bakes, or the non-Jew turns on the oven and the Jew bakes, all of that is sufficient for it to be Pas Yisrael, and that is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. Because at that point, once a Jew's doing that one small thing in the process, so you're keeping alive this understanding that in theory, bread baked by a non-Jew should be prohibited, right? We don't want to totally dispense with the halakha. I want people to be aware that there's a sensitivity here. So as long as the Jew participates somewhat, it's all good.
I think 90% of this bread by a non-Jew is motzi after Pesach, when we used to go to the Italian bakery to get bread, when they had bakeries years ago. They don't have bakeries now. So, you know, that's what happened. People wanted to know, I remember my grandfather, oh, we'll go to the Italian bakery and buy bread, because the Jews' bakeries were all closed at that time. And they didn't want to wait till the next day. So these things came up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Okay, so we'll stop here. And next week, I want to just talk about a particular application of this discussion. And then we'll move on to talking about the dairy products, milk, cheese, etc. Have a good week, everyone. See you on Shabbos or next week.
I see Gil Arkman is here. I haven't